Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up from L.A. This is Dave. Welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, you live globally through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you, guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Ouch. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Grief counselor, author, psychotherapist, and executive coach, Dr. Todd Fisher. So stay tuned. I'm your host today, Dave Nassani, and this show is about caregivers of every kind. And to the one thing we know about caregivers, that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and are very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they tell you that if there's an emergency, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason is because they know you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above theirs. And then you won't be of any help to anybody. And you know, caregivers are the same way. We also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Unfortunately, folks, the only way out of the grief process is to go through the grief process. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and loss if you happen to feel like you are stuck. Because that's our topic today, grief. And if your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me, my radio podcast, my books, my videos, by going to my website, davenass.com. That's Dave, and then the first four letters of my last name. N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, that's DaveNass.com. And if you just tell me your name and email, guess what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to send you a really neat gift. First, a copy of my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships in ebook format. And you know what? If that wasn't enough, I'm going to throw in a free report entitled 10 Mistakes That All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't. Now, don't miss out on these cool freebies worth over $20, folks. All right, enough of that. Welcome to the show, Dr. Todd. Sorry you had to sit through all of that introduction stuff for all of our first-time listeners. Are you there?
Yes, Dave, I'm here. Glad to be here.
Good, good. Dylan, how was your week?
It's been good. It's been exciting to make some changes. You know, it's always, I think life is a process, and there's always time for grieving. Even if you're through grief, there's always a grief about something else. And so this is a very important topic on many levels.
Yeah, we always seem to be grieving about something, don't we?
Yeah, that in our society that it's very difficult for people to grieve. That in other cultures, I think they do a better job. But I think especially in American culture that it's we're very resistant to feeling our feelings. We tend to be more goal-focused and getting things done and it typically goes against that grain in nature of ourselves.
Well, why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself? Tell us who you are, and I know I would like to know. Obviously, you've been a grief and loss counselor at one time. Have you ever had any personal experience yourself with grief and loss? And how exactly did you get into this field?
Well, there's a couple of different questions in there. I'll start with the first one, which is
you call a loaded question.
Yeah, this is like three questions in one. So I'll start with the first one, which I think is more about my background, and that I have a doctorate in psychology, and that I'm a psychotherapist, and so I do work with, I have worked and also work with folks during the grief process. I do more coaching right now, kind of looking for a new opportunity for kind of a neat place to serve. And so the next thing is, what is my background in this? That When I was young, my mom died when I was 15. She died of breast cancer. And actually, it was breast cancer, and then it metastasized into another it metastasized into the rest of her body. And so it it killed her. But it definitely was a life-altering experience for me, and one of the reasons why I went back to become a counselor. That had kind of a neat process of doing some group counseling and also doing participating in leading workshops on grief and loss, and also participating in leading groups for teens and also for adults. So I've kind of got a wide gamut of experience in this. I also studied some in terms of research too, so this will be an interesting talk for today. But don't let me get it too boring, though. If I ever do, just tell me.
No, I'll make sure. Well, why don't you tell our listeners, what is the mask of grief? You and I spoke a little bit, and I think that's an interesting topic. I've never heard of it before.
Whenever something happens, whether that be a loss of a loved one, in your case, that you know something happened to your wife, and so physically that your life was different, that, in my opinion, there's a mask that is put on us and that our life is different now, and there's a lens that we kind of look through the world, that the world is just different now. Like, it will never be the same. And so that mask, in my opinion, is basically, and also just from what other people have said too, I think you can agree with this, that the mask sits very tightly on your face, and all you can see and think about is that particular event. All you can think about is that person dying. All you can think about is that person's, you know, stroke, or that person's, you know, difficulty that they have now. And it's really hard for you to think about other things other than that. And the good thing about grief is eventually, and it takes a while, that mask begins to lift. And you start to be able to see around the corners of that. And so you get to integrate more of your life back. And it's not like the first and only thing on your mind, you know, all the time. Does that make sense?
Very interesting. Yes, yes, absolutely. Can you please explain what are the three most important questions out there to ask yourself while you're grieving? I think we had spoken, and they all begin with L.
Yes. The first one, well, I'll say what all of them are first, and then I'll go back to each of the individual ones. Right. What's lost, what's left, and then what's the legacy? And even before the show, Dave wanted a little bit more clarification as to what that was. And what's lost is, I'll just give it for example that I can relate to, is that whenever I was 15, my mother died. And so physically, her presence was not there anymore. Physically, that she couldn't, you know, be in my presence. She couldn't, you know, make me meals, help me out with maybe some of the homework that she would have before that. So her physical presence is gone. The next one is what is left is, well, there's actually a lot of memories that we have, a lot of, you know, whether that be pictures, whether that be, you know, just memories in my mind that I can still think about. There's also things to remember, you know, things that we've shared, like her playing on the piano, us singing together. We both, you know, played instruments. So there's all kinds of different things that we can kind of talk about in terms of what's still left. The next one is what's the legacy, and this is kind of the neat one, is truly to take whatever the memory is and then try to take that a step further, which is to maybe plant a tree, do something with the family together, to try to maybe even donate money to some sort of charity or cause that she would have wanted the money to go to, or maybe even, you know, me volunteering for a cause that she would have really gotten her hands around. But it's a way to remember her in kind of a neat way that, and this is actually also a really good one for guys, that some of the other ones are more difficult to do, some of the more steps, but this is something physically that they can do, like they can plant a tree, they can do something physically in a way that, you know, they can grieve, because guys tend to be more, and this is probably being sexist, but or generalist about it, but they like to do things. And so this is a way to kind of engage their brain and their own experience in this way. that's not too emotional.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. You know, this show is to caregivers mostly, and caregivers who are experiencing burnout in particular. And a lot of people know that caregivers are probably caring for people who are in the grief process. You know, if you suffer a stroke and you lose your speech, or you're paralyzed from the neck down, paraplegic or something, or if you have an autistic child, that kind of caregiver. We get that the care receivers are probably stuck in the grief process or going through the grief process. But a lot of times what we don't realize is the caregiver oftentimes, you know, is supposed to be this normal person caring for this disabled person, but they're typically going through the grief process as well. And their loss may be every bit as real as the disabled person's loss. I mean, let's just take me and my wife for an example. She suffered a stroke. She lost her speech. She's not the same woman that I married. She has a very difficult time communicating. And she's in a wheelchair now. So, you know, we can't go for walks on the beach anymore. We can't have any deep conversations anymore. So I have suffered a loss by that definition. And so I was in the grief process. I was going through, you know, the denial, the anger, the depression, and I had to come to my own acceptance on this as well. So that's pretty legitimate, isn't it? The caregivers, I mean, I know your
very
ministry
legitimate.
Isn't specifically to caregivers, but kind of comment on that.
Well, I think it's very relevant, that whether it's a death, whether it's, I read a very interesting book, it was on death and also divorce, and that on some level that it's divorce can be more difficult because the person is physically still there. And that they really want, in terms of the relationship, you know, the relationship physically changes, and so there's all kinds of physical reminders of that person. And so it can be even, my point is that it can be sometimes more difficult for being a caregiver and really knowing, you know, depending on the person, knowing the liveliness of the person that you used to know. A good friend of mine that he said, you know, the gift I would give to anybody would be just to have coffee with my mom. And so his mom had brain cancer. And so she physically was never the same person after she got brain cancer. She wasn't this lively kind of, and I'm sure she had moments of that, but still it wasn't the same person that, you know, he knew before. And that literally, and she had many, many surgeries and many, many, you know, just very difficult times. But I think that, I think it relates in terms of the other part is that I don't know if caregivers, and probably you've alluded to this, want to give themselves permission to grieve. That there's probably just an expected, I'm supposed to do this, and I don't have the right to grieve. I don't have the right to have time for myself so that I can do some of these things and, you know, some of the things that we'll hopefully talk about here in a little bit, but some things that folks can do to start on that grieving process so that they feel better and hopefully more energized.
Right, and that's really a contributing factor to all of this burnout, is that, you know, they're not taking care of themselves. They're probably not eating right. They're probably not sleeping right. They're probably giving all of their extra time to their care receiver instead of taking a little me time. And on top of all of that, if that wasn't bad enough, they're grieving, and they might not even know they're grieving or even give them permission to grieve or to cry or to recognize the loss that they have suffered and so on. So very, very good point there. This is a great topic.
I think, what we were talking about before, the, you know, what's lost, what's left, and the legacy is, it could be even, for your wife as an example, is maybe there's a group of folks that she was a part of that, you know, the person could help volunteer or somehow, that, you know, depending on the the person's illness, but maybe there's something that you guys could do together along those lines. And maybe it's church related.
Right.
Maybe it's, you know, but still it's a way to connect to one another, but trying to create some sort of legacy for the person. But I think it actually helps both of you in the process.
Well, this show, in a way, is a legacy to my wife, because if it wasn't for her stroke, I wouldn't be reaching out to caregivers. So there you go. We're doing it. We don't
which
even realize we're doing it.
Which is a wonderful gift you're providing every week that you do it. And so that's, you know, kudos to you, and just wonderful.
Thanks.
That what a true blessing you are to all the people that you're helping for this webcast or podcast.
Well, it's fun, and I'm the one being blessed. And of course, they say it's more blessed to give than to receive. I think the Bible said that. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's NASS. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back with Dr. Todd, who is a psychotherapist, was a grief counselor, and knows a lot about grief and loss. Dr. Todd, let me go backwards here, back to the mask of grief. I didn't know if I was just paying attention or maybe it's a difficult concept to grasp, but I'm not sure I fully understand what it is. Can you kind of clarify further about the mask of grief?
Sure. Maybe a better way to put it is, imagine physically, have you seen one of those little paper mache masks that some people wear?
Even will
draw on, and then they physically, you know, put it on for like Halloween or different events. Well, the mask of grief, in my opinion, it's in fact, this is an exercise we used to do at Bo's place. Put a little plug in for them in Houston that I volunteered at. Is that they had us do this physical mask exercise, and you would get to draw the mask of grief or whatever that looks like for you, and so people probably see you as being a different person than you were before. And so on some level that you wear that physical mask of grief on your face. And so, and also, it's also the way that you look at the world. So I'll just go.
Give me some examples.
So let's say for somebody who, I'll just use your example. For you, your wife had a stroke. And so that the life that you knew is totally different now than it was before. But probably as soon as you heard the news that your wife had a stroke, that, and then probably the, you know, doctor's appointments after this, that seemed to be everything that you talked about, right? that was like on your mind. Every, you know, probably everyone in your family talked about that. It seemed to be the conversation that was just, you know, how the doctor's appointments were going. It just seemed to be front and center in almost every part of your life, my assumption is. Right?
Absolutely.
And then as time kind of passed and you became moved, as far as, you know, time moved farther away, that mass started to actually disappear on some level. And so that you became to get more of your world back. Now, the world is never the same, as we know through grief, but it's definitely you get more of your life back. And so that mask begins and tends to lift as you go through the process. Does that make sense? Like literally you'll have more of the same conversations that you used to have, maybe about, I don't know if you're a sports guy, but maybe have some of those conversations, or to have more conversations about, you know, more of your business, but maybe your business was on the back burner, but now you start to talk about that again. Because you almost need to bring back some of that, because our assumption is that most folks need to have an income or to figure out some sort of arrangement for that.
Yeah.
But that it's not as front and center.
As I'm trying to think of what mask of grief I was wearing, you know, I might have drawn a big smile on my mask, and I was, oh, yeah, everything's good, everything's fine, we're doing good, you know, she's progressing, you know, just kind of in that denial mode. Yeah, this is no big deal, we'll be through this in a while, you know, and just kind of glossing over the severity and the seriousness of things. That's a mask, right?
That is very much a mask. And then one of the questions that is good to ask is, well, that was the mask that you're wearing on the outside, but what's the one on the inside? What's happening, you know, that maybe in your inner deep thoughts, what were you actually experiencing?
Yeah, you know, the fear, the uncertainty, the just freaking out on the inside, just hoping. Because I'm a person of hope and a person of faith, and I was trying to be that person. And, you know, in the lonely hours, in those valleys of the shadows of death, when the demons come in the middle of the night to tell you how bad things are, you know, we don't really share that a lot.
And that's, you hit on a great point. That's one of the difficult times is when you're alone, that you have, you know, time alone, that your thoughts tend to probably not be the most positive. And those thoughts are definitely okay. And that, to accept that, you know, things might not be
normal,
the same, that things, you know, are, you know, different than they used to be, whatever that may be.
But
I'm always kind of leery of some of these.
Now, what were you going to say? Finish your thought.
I was just saying I'm really leery of some approaches, even in psychology. It's kind of that they have this quick fix for grief, and that, you know, you can automatically do some sort of amazing process that you can get over some of the loss of somebody or the situation. And it's usually not that easy to do.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you spoke earlier with me, you know, about some of the questions that I would be asking, and you spoke about the importance of family rituals and support groups and creating time for grieving. Why don't you go into that for a bit?
Yeah, that starting with support groups. That I think support groups are an amazing way for people to get through grief. You had talked about with me earlier about, you know, what is the ways that people can get through the stages of grief quicker. And I think one of the ways to do that is to join a support group, that the person who is the caregiver and also the person who is, you know, getting the care, I think also needs one. And you probably know better than I, but I know there's ones for, you know, the death and loss, but it's neat that there's a lot of programs that, like, the kids can go in one place and then the adults can go somewhere else. Or couples can separate, depending on, you know, what kind of a group it is. But it's just neat if the individual people have a place of their own that they can grieve, and they can share maybe some thoughts that are negative or maybe not, you know, happy, wonderful, joyful thoughts about that person in a safe setting. And that can be truly, you're not saying that they don't like that person. It's more just to have a place where they can express some things that are difficult, that they're having a difficult time with. And amazing things about support groups is that they tend to get a lot of support. yes. which is a true gift.
Yes, you're absolutely right. When Charlene was still in the hospital, we got a visit from a stroke survivor, and she was saying, you know, it's very important to get in a support group. There's one right here at the hospital. We have a support group for the stroke survivor, and we have a support group for the caregiver. You know, it all kind of sounded Greek to me at the time because we were just focusing on getting her out of here and getting her better. And who is this person who looked not normal, by the way, because she was a stroke survivor. She had a speech impairment. And I remember thinking my first thought, oh, my gosh, is this how bad it's going to be after a stroke where you slur your words and you have to stop and think for words to say? And I just remember being a little worried and saying, I don't think I want to be a part of that group. But then in retrospect, looking back, we did join a group, and I was in the caregiver part and my wife was in the stroke survivor part. And it was so funny because both groups kind of talk about each other and, you know, just a place to vent and how, yeah, I get so frustrated when my spouse is so demanding, they want this and that and this and that. And don't they realize that, you know, I'm not their slave and I'm doing my best and stuff like that. And, you know, you need a safe place to talk to people who are also going through the same thing that you're going through. And it's just really releasing, and it's very, very nice. I absolutely needed that.
I was just gonna add on to what you're saying. Don't want to interrupt you, but that the main thing that the research says is that can get people through is actually having a support group more than anything else. Is to have a solid support group, whether that be a group that, you know, is like provided by a hospital or a church or even just a good group of friends. That is more important than any other factor in getting through the grief process.
Yeah, I agree. Now, what about family rituals? Give me some examples of a family ritual that would help.
Family ritual. A family ritual could be, I know one of the ones that I'll just mention, some of the ones that we did, even at those places, was one is to release balloons. Now, that's probably not environmentally friendly here now, I realize. But maybe it's planting something in the ground that shared, you know, that is kind of a reminder, kind of a time capsule of, you know, what was going on then. Another thing could be create a box of just things of the past that reminds you of, you could have your own individual box or it could be a family box, that it could be movies that the person liked, that you can kind of pull out the box, and you know, I'm thinking of like a DVD that you could just put in the box, and then you've got Netflix and other things, but just other things that physically reminds you of the time together, like, you know, neat time that the family shared. It could be, you know, postcards from a neat trip that you did, but it's just a way, or, you know, like a personal letter that the person wrote, but it's a physically, you would just take these items and you would kind of go through them. You can do, like I said, you can do this individually.
Or do family traditions that you used to do before, let's say it was a death, that you just continue doing those traditions, let's say Christmas time, you know, and so on.
Maybe there was a certain night of the week that the family shared dinner, so you continue to do that. Or maybe it's not, you know, every week now, but maybe it's once a month. But something that, or if maybe it was a dinner out, but now it's maybe a family meal at home, that you continue to do that so that there is the consistency. And also that the other part that I think is important too, that sometimes people miss out on, is that there's so many things going on with the person who's sick, who's, you know, the caregiver, that they sometimes forget about the kids and what's going on for them. And so I think one of the great things that some of these family rituals provide is, and even if the adults are just quiet, a lot of the times the kids will talk. That sometimes adults are just too worried about filling up space with things to say, and just if they're quiet enough, that sometimes the teenagers or the kids are just asking them questions about, you know, what do you remember, or what is your most positive memory, or what is something that you're funny that your dad did or that your mom did or whatever, that some of those neat stories can come out and be shared, which is very healing.
Yeah, those are great ideas. And I want to say, just what the grief process is, because there might be some people out there who are just hearing this for the first time and say, what is the grief process? I know I had a caller on the show a few weeks ago. People kept asking him, well, are you grieving? And he didn't know what they were saying, you know. What is the grief process? I mean, you know, we know it starts usually with denial, and then when that doesn't work anymore, it goes into anger and any relief, then the person kind of goes into a bargaining or a negotiating standpoint, either with God or with the other person. And then some go into guilt if they can somehow try to blame themselves for what happened. And then depression. And then some actually have these lonely feelings, which is associated with depression. And then acceptance. So is that basically the path along the grief process?
Yeah, I think you did. I think you've done a good job to explain it. That I just kind of, from some of my own grief studies and also through some of the courses that I've been in, is I really like the Kubler-Ross model, mm-hmm. which you highlighted, just
that's
the first one of denial. Say it again.
I think there's five of them,
right? Yeah, she's got five of them. The first one being denial and isolation.
Yeah.
And that, you know, denial of, you know, that nothing's happened, isolation of, you know, just spending your time by yourself and not really engaging in it. Anger,
right.
You know, there's definitely, you have a right to be angry, but, you know, that there's definitely things that are different and that, you know, sometimes the things are just, they're just not going to be the way that they used to be. And,
okay.
Yeah. And
we're coming up to another break. Go ahead, finish your thought, and then we can take a break.
I was just going to say that one of the things that, you know, I don't want to go through all the things that you just said, but maybe after the break we can go through a little bit more about depression, which I think is important to note and talk about.
Yeah, probably the most serious of them, because most suicides come out of a depression. All right, we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Stay tuned.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years. After she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassan.
And we're back with Dr. Todd, psychotherapist, grief counselor. Dr. Todd, let's talk about depression real quickly. We have 15 minutes left on the show. And go ahead.
Yeah, I would just say that in terms of depression, that one thing that can be beneficial is just to look at if your life has changed in terms of your job, your relationships, or education, or your relationships. And so if they've if they've changed quite a bit since the happening of the grief, whatever that may be, that you may need to see. I mean, I've led grief groups for a long time, and even guys who would never have thought about antidepressants, you know, tried one and said, "Wow, you know, I got my brain back, and I can actually work now." And a lot of times, what's neat is since it's more of a situational depression that it wasn't necessarily a biological one beforehand, that most people don't need to take medication for, you know, for many years, that it's more just to get them through the difficult times. And so just to think about that.
Yes. And let's, unfortunately, most suicides come from depression. So how do we know if a depression is serious enough where we should seek a doctor, talk about prescriptions and medications, antidepressants, stuff like that, or if it's just, you know, a situational depression that will snap out of eventually?
Well, yeah, mentioning suicide, if you have thoughts of suicide, if you are, you know, if you have a plan, if you have a, if it's kind of meditated, if you spend a lot of time, you know, in how you would do it, I would go see a therapist. I would go see, you know, your physical doctor to see about getting some sort of medication. And I think it's also just a real good sign to get some sort of therapy. And if, you know, therapy is kind of out of the question, definitely go to a support group and get help that way. But they also have a lot of times people that can help others in that remark, or can refer people that do have a depression. But it's really if you have a marked change in your work, as in it's very difficult to work now, that you're unable to focus now, your relationships, like you just want to spend all your day in bed, you end up spending a lot more time sleeping is also another one. If you eat a lot less than you used to, or you eat a lot more than you used to, are also signs of depression. And those are, you know, like I said, I don't want to go too much into that, because I think there's some more important stuff. And we can, you know, you can ask me another time to come back. But we can, let's talk about some of the other stuff.
All right. You know, I've had some personal experience in saying the wrong thing to someone in grief, believe it or not. They were grieving for like a year and a half. Well, it was a fiance who had died suddenly, and she was still grieving after a year and a half. You know, his picture was still on, their picture together was still on Facebook, and every anniversary of something that would come around, she'd say, "I'm really having a hard time," you know. So I said something like, you know, it's been a while. Have you decided to, you know, maybe join a support group or you know, move on with your life and, you know, maybe change your Facebook picture? You know, just things like that, as tactfully as I could. But it doesn't matter how tactful you are. You know, I got my head chewed off because everyone grieves in their own time, and how dare you, blah, 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 blah. You know, just, it wasn't good.
Yeah, and probably you have a different perspective on that now in terms of what to say. I think even small questions like, how are you doing, can be kind of stupid, really. Whenever you ask somebody how they're doing, it's like, well, yeah, if somebody physically just died, or somebody just had a stroke, how am I supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
I feel myself a kind of angry even as I describe it. It's more just try to be with the person, in my opinion, and just try to listen to the best of your ability and not trying to change them. And the only thing that potentially you could do is not to tell them stories, not to, you know, tell them what to do, but if anything, to tell stories of, if you've been through that place, then I think you've earned the right. But if you've never kind of had that difficult time of having somebody close to you die or having somebody with a stroke, then, you know, it's just be very cautious in your words and lean on the side of listening versus telling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. It's almost like when you see a woman who has a little pouch on their belly. I've learned a long time ago, you don't ask them how many months are you pregnant, because they may not be pregnant. So I put that right up there with treating people who are grieving. I'm exaggerating, of course. I'm not that bad. Anyway, let's move on to the next question. What the effect on children and teens on grieving can be slightly more complicated than adults, yes or no?
I don't think it's necessarily more complicated. I think it's just different, and that there's also some attention that needs to be spent to it. One of the great things is that kids and teens are very resilient. Throughout whatever the study may be, that people who have gone through very difficult backgrounds have also come out to the other side and been very successful, whether that be financially or in terms of giving, that it doesn't necessarily mean that, because the person has a bad whatever that happening, that they're going to turn out like that. One of the key things is that depending on how well the parents do will depend on how well the kids do. So if the parents aren't doing well, then there's more of a chance for the teens, kids, to not do as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so the
kids
more
are more physically, emotionally, you name it.
Exactly. And so the more that the parents kind of take care of themselves, listen to this podcast, go to support groups, read books, just literally take care of themselves. And also, in the other part is just engage their children. Now, it can be difficult sometimes with, middle schoolers or high schoolers, but to figure out some meaningful way to still engage with people is a benefit. And that they'll, even kids will remember, many years later of those things that you did to connect with them, just to spend even just a few minutes, with them can be beneficial. And it's even more difficult now with technology, that to try to have some meaningful moments with kids and maybe, creating something like, I'm thinking for like a father-son, like a fishing, or even, could be with a father-daughter. But anyway, but just to create meaningful moments that, those kids will remember.
Like
because
a
I think,
10-year-old boy, for example, would be in the grief process if he went through a divorce and now his parents are separated and, they're bouncing back and forth, right? That's the grief process, isn't it?
That's exactly the grief process. That, as a 10-year-old boy, that, mom and dad have split, that, maybe it's the time for dad to start, taking the boy, like to go hiking or they can go up in the mountains or just to do something physically together or even just to go to baseball games. I mean, that can be just wonderful. Doesn't even have to be major league. You can go inexpensive, like minor league or something, but it's just more the physical time is more important than the event itself.
Cool.
We're
down to the last 5 minutes of the show.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. See, there's a delay. Question is like 5 seconds before I hear your voice because of there's always a delay, and I'm sure it isn't really 5 seconds, but sometimes we talk over each other when we're really just answering each other. So finish that thought before I said what I said.
Well, I think you're right that this can be the same for a lot of different things. There's divorce, it's physical loss, death. It can be the same for caregivers that, physical, like a stroke or, an autoimmune disease like AIDS or other, disease that, family members didn't expect, but still is very life-changing.
Okay. Well, as I was saying, we're down to 4 minutes of the show. So what final practical takeaway tip can you give our caregiver listeners that they can, immediately implement something so that they can begin seeing an instant difference in their situations? Because hope is a very important thing when you're going through grief, that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And most people who don't, do well and are prone to suicide attempts are the ones that just don't see any hope, zero hope. So go ahead.
In terms of practical, I would just say make sure you include humor in your life, that whether that be through movies, going through improv or whatever it may be. For me, I happen to really enjoy movies. It's kind of my way to escape, and that's another thing that's important for them, is just to have some of their own time to escape and to give themselves permission to do that. But figure out, whether it be old movies that you enjoy or that truly, make your soul feel happy. And I think by doing that, you'll just be happy yourself and want to be a better caregiver. You'll just be an overall better person. But life won't be as difficult as sometimes probably your brain makes it out to be.
Yeah, I love that. And I've used humor a lot in our situation. In fact, sometimes people are shocked that I make jokes about the things I do. But, you know, my wife and I were funny people before, and we want to continue to be funny people in the midst of our tragedies. And so we do take some people by surprise when they see how we just make light of anything. But that's how we get through it. That's how we survive. Dr. Todd, thank you so much for it. Yes, it is. Thank you so much for coming on the show and allowing me to interview you. And thank you to my listening audience for tuning in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget that all of our shows are recorded podcasts that you can listen to on our website anytime. Go to davenass.com. That's Dave, N-A-S-S. And please register so you can get your free gifts. Until next week, God bless you all. Thank you again for tuning in.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.